I want to talk a little bit more about trees. Most of us walk past them so regularly that we hardly notice them. In the African savanna, there's so many that our senses easily become blunted to them, even if we are an ardent arborist. But if we pay attention, they are in life or in death. So amazing that we want to use terms like beautiful or pleasing or charming or soothing or elegant or impressive and so on. Yes, in the natural environment, trees are truly magnificent. And on the African savanna, they are infinitely variable. Each one has a unique story, and each story patiently shaped over years of violence and tranquility and abundance and drought, has produced a unique individual specimen that differ from others even within the same species. Trees are, of course, worthy recipients of all these accolades, but they just stand silent and modest and humbly go about their business of survival and reproduction. And they yield without bitterness to adversity and to pressure. And they withdraw without resentment when they feel they're not needed. And yet they thrive gratefully when they feel they're wanted and they're given sustenance. And in the process, they provide food and shelter to many. So, what do we really know about these wonderful beings, which in so many ways can serve, and they would not ask for more than to serve as the ultimate icons of our most lofty ideals? Of course, the botanists know a great deal in the scientific sense, but most of us are not botanists. We only experience trees in the visual and the spiritual sense. To me, they form a vital part of what makes the African wilderness alluring. Whether they are in dense clumps or sparsely spread, they give it its unique character. Wandering among them pleases and soothes me. They regularly shelter me and protect me. They sometimes give me sustenance. They even encourage me with the coolness of their shade, and they nourish me, my spirit, and they inspire me. Yeah, they just make out such a large, and I often think easily overlooked, part of my memories of the bush. And of course, the engineer's mind finds trees fascinating from a scientific perspective. How on earth did they find the formula for such structural strength in their trunks and their branches, or such highly effective bark to protect them? How did they arrive at the strategy to produce thorns to protect them against aggression? How did they find the formula for making the thorns so hard and so sharp that many can penetrate the toughest rubber of my tires or cut the skin like a surgical needle? How did they know to shape and position them so cleverly? They never fail to find their mark, and they leave wounds that you don't easily forget. And they also learnt that they can save energy, the energy needed to make the thorns, by not placing them in areas where they are not necessary, that are not vulnerable. So how did they learn to position their pods so that they can be plucked by browsers when they are ripe without too much interference from the thorns, so they can be distributed more effectively? And how did they learn to withdraw their sap from the cells and their outer limbs and drop their leaves to keep from freezing when it gets really cold, or to produce custom-made antifreeze or special wax coating to protect them against the cold? And how did they learn to produce those tannins that they can quickly spread to their outer limbs when they are threatened by browsers? Yes, the engineering mind has many more questions about them and about other animals animals and insects too, of course. And the botanist and the zoologist and biologist would have precise scientific answers to many. I suspect most would receive that single, and I sometimes think, rather overweighted word, evolution, as the answer. Now that may or may not be true in all cases, and it's a weighty theory that might serve to calm the inquisitive mind, but the precise mechanisms of many observations would remain unexplained, and it would leave the engineering mind to defer to the poetic one, and to allow in some mystery. Yes, some delicious mystique. Like, how is it that we are so drawn to trees? Is the reason purely utilitarian, like structural convenience? Or is it that we can often see in life and death of trees expressions of our own sorrows and joys? Is it that they calm us or inspire our artistic instincts, or are able to beckon us with their beauty and serenity? Or is it that they amaze us with their magnificence or astonishing resilience? Is it perhaps pheromonal? Do they have some kind of sentience that we subconsciously perceive and we are attracted to it? The engineering mind understands that these questions belong to a realm where the disciplines and the techniques that it is master of are of limited use, and it retreats with a nod, and not of defeat, but of respect. And now the poetic mind can frolic in the boundless possibilities of imagination.